And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 664. Here to recap week two Fab, talk some playing time, Fallout, and much more. And who better to talk playing time, Fallout with besides the man who's behind MLBPlayingTime.com. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. How's it going, Mike?
Yeah. early season blues, baby. But we're here.
Yes, that's the excitement people come to listen to right there. Curlin is on it. We're going to talk some playing time, like I said, the opening weekend. There is some interesting fallout from that. And then we'll recap the week two Fab and our picks and whatnot. Curlin more the 15 side, buddies and OCs this year, and all that fun stuff. So before we get into the playing time, Curlin, what do you got going on these days, fantasy wise, not depression wise?
They're the same.
content-wise.
Right now, I'm just kind of doing what I used to do behind the paywall, but I'm not going to do it for long. It's just fun to do the first few days because, you know, you go through everything. There's so much new information to kind of just see. So I'm making my own notes, and I'm like, yeah, let's press send. And so I'm putting out articles daily right now, tweeting out these big threads, and I kind of do it both. I give the tweets for people who like them, and then I write it. I put all in an article, clean it up. Useful names, you know, clean up the text so that way people have a better way to read it. But yeah, it's pretty much what it is right now. It's like a daily recap for the most part, which again, that's not gonna last for long. So there's that. There's a lot of just posting on X. I got the live stream now weekly with buddy JP at Dap Scout on Twitter or X, whatever. He's gonna be helping me co-host it because our availability lines up, and we recorded our first episode today, and we're putting the podcast feed on the basis of the podcast. Because I have that still existing, even though we don't really, George and I don't record as much as we used to, as in ever. But you can find that MLB Playing Time podcast on there. So, yeah, kind of just sticking to the brand and kind of just and commiserating over my teams every single day. On, you know, it's only April 2nd, but I can't help myself.
Yeah, it's April 2nd. We've played four games, basically, and Curlin is ready to call it a season. So
your team doesn't have a 9 ERA and 2 WHIP. Mine does.
Draft better. I can't know what to tell you. But long ways to go. A lot of people are in your shoes.
Like I told you, sure.
I told you I got a fun message about Bryce Harper being bad to start the season, and then he goes and double dongs on Tuesday. So things will be just fine in the end for most players, I shall say. We go over
Josh some, Young.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to that. Before we get to some of your playing time stuff, any like I guess surprise stuff that we won't discuss, anything that stood out to you, maybe statistical or besides the blow up pitching you already want to talk about, anything that surprises you, I guess.
I get surprised, and I shouldn't be, actually I should be, I guess, because you know how rookies are being pushed up so much. One of my biggest things was why are these guys called up to just sit on the bench or not play regularly? Like Graham Pauly. I always mix those two.
Graham Pauly. Yes.
So he started two in a row. I was like, cool, maybe he's getting playing time. And then Wade is playing over him tonight against a righty. So The playing time is part-time versus righties right now. So he's not even a full-time player in a platoon. So it's like limitations on top of limitations. Then you have Kowser, same kind of thing. Like he's the fourth outfielder type. He's playing tonight when they played. I think they played all their backups tonight, really. They played Tony Kemp too.
Yep, whatever. Because Alec Marsh, you know, you set him against aces. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's what that. They thought they mistook Alec Marsh for being a pushover, is what it is.
They mistook him for being Brady Singer.
Yeah, which that's weird. Right? Dude, the Royals, it's funny because we all were kind of in on like the Royals being a surprise team. And so far, they are like, it's not so much a shock to us fantasy like people who just saw the team was like, this could be fun. And, you know, coming out strong and, you know, Michael Garcia kind of, doing his thing, leading off. It's kind of nice to see. Wish I had him on both my main teams, but I got him on one at least. But it's really just the big thing for me is like these young guys that get called up. That why are you not giving them the playing time versus why not just give them those everyday at bats in AAA where they would probably be better off and be better ready if you need them if you call them up? Because now you have guys like Kowser. You took away all that momentum the second you stopped starting Kowser out of spring with the hot spring. Now you have him start one out of five games. How is that going to help the kid keep that motivation? The confidence and that. So that's where I'm really. It's just the. And there was another. There's another instance of that somewhere, but those two for sure stand out to me. And I know there's a third one somewhere that's really just. It doesn't make sense.
Well, we will get to them. We're going to go through Curlin's latest post on MLBPlayingTime.com. He obviously discussed this on his show, so go listen to it in great detail. There, we'll just highlight some of the big ones here, but. Let's start with Arizona, where Alec Thomas has his hamstring injury, which is pretty strong. He was already platooning. Barossa got called up. It seems like Barossa got the start on Tuesday against a lefty. So it feels like that's going to stay the same platoon. But what are you thinking when you look at that Arizona situation?
So it's a mess, right? It's you have Jake McCarthy, who's going to probably start against righties, strong side platoon. Barossa being the platoon partner for McCarthy. Grichuk is on his way back. When Grichuk comes back, Grichuk's going to take over. Barossa's going to go down. Grichuk will be the weak side platoon bat for McCarthy. And yeah, and then you still have Blaze Alexander, who's only DHing against lefties, which that's another one, right? That was the other one. I'm glad we talked, because not that he was in the same conversation as Kowser and Paulie, but at least it was one of those things where this guy had a hot spring and you keep him up and you're only batting him. And they've had so many lefties. I think it's like, what, 4 out of the first 6 games or something have been lefties already. So it's kind of a great run for Alexander, but it's one of those things where if you're not paying attention, you might think he has more run than he's had, when really it's just a matter of the schedules lined up amazingly for him. Maybe that's why they even kept him up. They realized, oh, the schedule's going to be great for Alexander. But yeah, so it's another guy that's just like, why not see what you have in him? I know Perdomo's glove is a thing. We're all aware. I think we've all been harping on that across the industry. Like, we get it. It makes no sense to us fantasy-wise, but real-life baseball, it makes a lot of sense why Perdomo's getting the playing time. But with that said, that team is just – it's a platoon. It's those guys – that little thing is a little bit of a platoon mess. But if you need speed and short – again, in a pinch, I think McCarthy's a great guy, because as long as he has righties on the menu, he should eat.
He should, for sure. I'm curious when Grichuk returns if maybe he takes Blaze's spot and leave Barossa up there. That's where I'm kind of curious to see where it all plays out. I doubt it. They would probably have kept Barossa up initially and put Blaze down. Who knows? But with Jordan Lawler obviously out for quite some time, maybe Blaze goes back and plays shortstop in Reno. Who knows? But D-backs going to D-back, but they are the National League champions. So do what you got to do, kids. Atlanta Braves, just want to bring it up because we all saw this coming a mile away when Adam Duvall signed with the Braves. But Jared Kelenic, and he also had a horrific spring training. I know it broke your heart to see. But do you think Duvall maybe even, because he's been very productive in his short platoon stint so far, do you think he actually might take over for Kelenic with that bad production?
The only reason why I'm saying no is because I think they want to see what this 24-year-old former top prospect has in him. And Kelenic's been solid to start the year. I know his spring training wasn't great, but I mean, 16.7% strikeout rate is really what stands out for Kelenic, because obviously strikeouts being a big issue of his. The fact that he's cut him down so much already. We're talking 12 plate appearances, though. It's a pretty strict platoon. But he's seen the ball well. He's hitting the ball well. We've seen Kelenic run hot in the past. He's running hot right now with his small sample. Power and speed haven't shown up yet, but I think they will. So Kelenic, I think, is going to have a little bit of a leash. This is also another team that has they have the offense to carry a struggling Kelenic too. So that's why I always thought Kelenic would have leash, because this team doesn't have to force offense into it, you know? So I think regardless, he'll get some run, but I'm more so wondering if he can show that he's like, hey, I'm really good right now. I'm doing really well against these righties. Does he actually push Duvall into less of a role? I think they like Duvall too much. I think Duvall's too good against lefties to make that happen, but maybe they make it, maybe they start slowly giving Kelenic those starts again if Kelenic earns them, and maybe like, okay, they'll give an extra off day to Ozuna or somebody else against lefty, which would make no sense because Ozuna crushes lefties too. But you get my point. I think Kelenic will determine his own playing time at the end of the day, but I do think he's safe at least for the short term, and I do think the leash is medium, not long, not short, just right. Goldilocks,
there you go. The Cubs, they got a lot going on, but the one thing I want to ask you that stood out to me when I was writing my risers and fallers column is Michael Busch is playing every day at first base to start the year here, which kind of surprised me. I guess maybe I was just overthinking it, but when Bellinger came back, I thought Busch might have got squeezed out of this scenario. All these things, you know, Christopher Morel's got the rough defense at third. I thought maybe even Morel could have gone to first base or whatever, but I was kind of shocked that Busch is there. His production was horrific the first weekend of the year. Again, small sample. What are your feelings on this scenario besides, we don't need to talk about Hap and all of them, but Michael Busch specifically?
Yeah, and I think the reason why Busch is playing as much as he is because Patrick Wisdom isn't there. He's on the IL, so that could be a big reason why. So all they have really against, I mean, unless they want to play Nick Madrigal, but Madrigal plays... You know, I guess I am surprised, though, because I initially projected Busch to be on the weak side of a on a strong side of a platoon, because I thought Garrett Cooper would factor more against righties or against lefties, and he has, but I knew Talkman was not going to play against lefties. I thought Cooper would get in there, maybe Madrigal, because Madrigal is a righty and can play the field. As you mentioned, Morel playing third base has been kind of iffy. How many games has he even played at third base? Has he started any games? I know he's played every day, but I'm just curious how many games he's even. Yeah. How many games
he's there today?
He's there today. I'm looking up his totals because I know it's been a lot of DH. Okay, so it was the one DH is in my brain.
Yeah,
so mostly at
third base today.
Yeah. Good for him. I saw DH, I think, opening day, and I was like, oh, here we go. And I just kind of stopped paying attention to his eligibility. I don't care about eligibility.
Hit fourth every day, too. It's beautiful.
Well, yeah, that part. See, I knew he played every day. That much, hey, I got that part right. He's playing. But yeah, the Bush thing. Back to the Bush is back to the Bush. he's a guy that I just didn't expect to play against lefties. And I think part of that is wisdom, not being on the IL is kind of the reasoning behind it. So I think once wisdom returns, or if he returns, and that would be why. And I'm doing stuff on the back end of my own site now to fix something because I didn't realize something. So yeah, don't mind me. Anyway.
I did want to bring Cincinnati up because when TJ Friedel got hurt, it was like, oh, Jake Fraley, Will Benson, how's it going to play out? Well, Will Benson's the dude. He's hitting second versus righties. He hit ninth versus the one lefty they saw. Fraley is sat. You documented that very well here. How much, like, just we're obviously speculating because TJ Friedel might be back by the end of April sometime. Are we thinking Fraley just gets the boot here and we get Benson and Friedel working together? How would you think this plays out?
I think it's a pain. This is when we start getting, that's when things start getting interesting, right? Do we, because you see Steers batting the lowest against all these guys against righties. Does Steers start losing some playing time regularly against righties if he's not hitting them well by then? Is this when they start rotating guys in and out, give them regular days off? Does India finally go back to that semi part-time playing time against? I think Fraley's going to, as long as Fraley's hitting, I think he sticks against righties. Benson, he's their guy batting second every day. So I think, Martinez, that's probably where it goes. If Friedel's in, the Martinez out. I think that's a pretty clear one. But obviously, by the time Friedel returns and you have Marte showing up a month later. So, or maybe 2 months, either way. But I think Martini obviously just gets the boot to the bench. And then there's a clear path to playing time for all of them against righties, actually. I don't know. It's funny because Martini's highlighted in a color on my sheet and I still overlooked him right there for a second. So I think Steer's fine. I think Benson, I think Fraley just moves to DH and Friedel to center. Is how that ends up working.
We already knew there's a lot of moving parts and some injuries obviously cleared a lot of that up. But Will Benson getting that two hole against right-handed pitching was a big opening day one and it stuck. So it's very weird. Interesting there.
Caught us all. I don't think anyone projected, like, look at any site, not just me, Roster Resource, RotoWire, because the team themselves said they wanted Ellie batting second, and then Ellie didn't bat second.
He's six pretty much.
Consistently. Yeah, both sides. It doesn't even matter.
All right, let's go to Cleveland. A player you don't have on here as your little notes, but I just want to get your thoughts on him. What are we doing with Tyler Freeman?
He's great for 15s. He's a guy that he's playing every day. I thought more of a speed guy. I know he's playing center, I think it's every day. It's been pretty much every day, all but one game so far.
Pretty much, yeah.
He hit a home run yesterday. Not sure there's much power there, but we've been surprised before by the power, right? At the end of the day, though, he's more of a guy that you're targeting for volume purposes. I think in 15s, I wouldn't go anything beyond that for him.
Okay, that's where I was worried. He kind of surprised me. Saw the name discussed a lot. Put him in my DFS lines. He was at fifth the other night when he went deep. I was just like, goodness gracious, this is amazing. So I'm curious. I did not expect him even to have an impact on the Cleveland lineup. The other thing I'll ask you is Bo Naylor's not playing every day.
It's lefties. He's platooning. So they faced, I think, two or three. They faced two lefties already out of the first five games. So you're seeing Bo Naylor not play every day because Hedges is that is a platoon there for sure. Yeah. And it's aggravating because I thought he would get his days off against lefties. I didn't think he'd sit every lefty for Hedges, but then Hedges of course comes in and hits the last few games against lefties. So it's obviously, as long as he's hitting, I'm sure he'll play, he'll stick, but just a weird dynamic right now.
All right, let's talk Tigers here. Cause you mentioned it before the show. So I want to give you a little floor here. Cause Mark Connell, like when he signed, it was I thought, okay, veteran, he's going to DH, you know, help out the young guys develop and whatnot. And you mentioned it because you're having this roster crunch on your 15 maybe in the coming week or so. Mark Connell's playing every day. So what are we thinking with him? If this sticks, obviously has got some 15 team love, maybe 12 team when he plays well. He's got power speed. But what's your more 15s than 12s, obviously. But what's your thoughts on this early Mark Connell run?
So Mark, he's a guy I went out and Mark, I know Connor's a guy that I went out and acquired in a few leagues. We'll talk about later, but yeah, just for that reason, he's playing every day and he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. So it caught my attention. Like a guy like that with a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed in the middle of the lineup, good, bad teams still produce runs, and you want guys that bat at the top and middle. If you want guys on those teams, you want top four or five hitters. That's why even the White Sox, those guys were being drafted relatively well because again, bad team. And yeah, so that's really what it is. It's a volume play, but also, you know, there's a little fantasy juice there. He's already hit a home run, stole base this season. I believe he stole base. But yeah, he's already shown a little something to him. This week, they got three lefties. And he might even just be a bench streamer in 15s, but he's a guy that playing time is king, and he's got it right now.
Kansas City Royals, you mentioned they've only faced righties so far, so we don't have a ton to go off of here. They did face a lefty on Tuesday. But Adam Frazier seems to be locked in versus right-handed pitching right now. Again, deeper league play when it comes to Adam Frazier, but are we even excited about that, or is it more just like desperation
for Adam Frazier? I think it's I'm not really considering him. I mean, maybe for now, but what happened when Michael Massey comes back? I know Massey's probably not gonna be a long IL stint. That's where it gets interesting, because what happens there? I think it could be like kind of a mixed bag. It's almost, we're seeing a couple situations where like Richie Palacios, another guy that only plays against righties, but then will only play 5 out of 6. And that could be one of those situations where he's like, so that could be one of those things where Frazier ends up being limited on top of being limited. You know what I mean? So okay. I'm not all that interested unless I'm streaming MI and knowing that he has that run right now, that runway, but it can be gone the moment that we see Massey come back.
It should. Massey should take that job over. He's the better player. let's hope that takes place. All right, I'm going to let you give me all the whatever you want to give me here. Luis Rengifo only started one game so far because Anthony Rendon apparently needs to lead off, even though he doesn't hit the first weekend of the season. And Miguel Sano's got a DH in the middle of the order every day outside of like one day off. It's beyond infuriating, Mr. Curl. And I know you told me, you warned me, so I'll give you the floor here, but it's still absolute garbage. It's like if you had good players to play in front of them, I would listen to you. But this is not it, Ron Washington. Like, leave the cocaine in Texas. We're in California now. Go get some gummies. Let's go.
Yeah, so it was more so like, okay, so beginning of offseason, we're going to go back a little bit here. I was like, man, I can't get behind the Rengifo thing because I know he crushed righties in that one little small sample, but his overall career against righties has been rather pedestrian at best, right? Like, I think he's below average and everything. But I understood the reasons for optimism. This team doesn't exactly have, or didn't, and they still really don't have reasons not to play him every day. But Ron Washington, and then what changed my tune, because I initially had him as a part-timer against righties. That was my initial, and I thought he was going to at least get lefties. He didn't today, which was weird. But my initial projection of Rengifo was that he was going to be a part-timer against righties and not play every day, which I know it's kind of a hot take at the time, but then it ended up shifting gears when he's like, oh, we're going to look at Rengifo as a leadoff hitter. Okay, cool. I'm willing to be like, okay, I'm wrong. I'll readjust my projection based on that. And then they're like, well, I don't like how he attacks pitches too quickly in the count. He wants people that sit. I'm like, all right, cool. But there was no hints that like, hey, we're not going to start him. It was more so like we're going to drop him in the order and he might take some, maybe he'll play 5 out of 7, but he's still mostly a regular. That's like complete. So even me as a pessimistic guy on Rengifo, I still didn't see this. You know what I mean? I can't victory lap this. I can give you crap behind the scenes because it's fun too. But not even I saw this. I didn't think Sano was. I knew Sano was going to factor, but I didn't think he was going to be an everyday guy. So this, it's just a lot. It's just weird. It's just a lot of weird, and I don't know what to do with a lot of weird. But it's weird.
I'm just like telling myself, and this is like, okay, let's have this discussion real quick. If you were rostering Rengifo in a 12-team league, would you drop him?
See, you're asking the wrong guy, because I probably would, but I'm also
you're playing 12s now, so that's what.
But I'm also not a Rengifo guy. So if I had him, maybe I'd be holding on to him. He'd be like my one stash. But even then, it's like
it's tough.
But my thing is when you look at him, you kind of needed him to compile. Now, one injury opens up that door.
Yes. But the fab bidding will be ridiculous if that were to happen.
That's kind of the point. Like, I don't know what we're going to, and on top, but what should it be? Like, when you look at his stats, you're hoping for Gene Segura type numbers. And Segura in a 12 was never really a guy that you had to have outside those first few years. When he was like, what, hitting 10 to 15, stealing 30 plus, batting 280. I don't think Rengifo can give you that, like, across the board. I think there's a little more pop, a little less speed. And so maybe it's a bad comp. My point is, like, I'm not sure how useful his skill set is for 12s anyway. But again, I've also been very low on Rengifo compared to others.
Yeah, like I'm thinking there's a 15 home run bat there with 25 plus steals if he leads off and plays every day. Like, I think there's a really good player if they let him play every day, because, like, I've given this discussion on many of my shows, so people should know by now. But, like, what we saw, yes, small sample last year, was like the first time in his career he got to play every day. And that's, like, it goes a long ways for me. Plus, he's young as hell, like, compared to what other people think. When you think Rengifo, you might think he's old because that name's been around for a while. He's not that old. So,
and that's where I can't knock you, is you were targeting potential upside in a situation where, like, there was reasons to buy into the upside. Like, not only did we see a small little pickup in, you know, because the price wasn't bad. It was like a very affordable price for Rengifo. There was a little flash in the pan skills. Maybe he was growing in his skills a little bit. And then on top of that, there was a path to playing time. But the problem is you were betting on, like, a little bit of everything, and he's getting literally none of that right now. And that's the problem. So, that's where I get torn on in 12s, because, okay, so even if he gets that everyday role, he's not going to lead off, because they're Shanwell, Hicks. These are all guys that already, and the reason why I'm saying those guys, because Rendon would be the one that gets hurt, obviously. That's just how it works. So
you might have it in front of you. When the day Rengifo started, he hit what, fifth, sixth?
I could pull it up and give me a second.
I'm pretty sure. I'm just going off the top of my head here. It's like fifth or sixth. And I could live with that. If he hits fifth every day, I'll take it. Like, that still works for me in this scenario. But obviously, leading off would be immensely better. I guess the combination, while you're looking that up, is, for me, it's, and I'm stashing for now, but it's like every week is going to be one of those, is it time? And eventually it will be if this continues. But it's like, I'm stashing on the upside of Rengifo, also with it's Miguel Sano and Anthony Rendon. Are we really sixth. Doing this? Like, so you get six. So it's a combination of, like, Rengifo's talent and how much longer can they keep running Sano and company out there. That's where I'm like going back and forth in this wavering dilemma.
It's not easy. No. But you're asking, like I said, you're asking the wrong guy, because I would probably have no problem letting go. But at the same time, I'm biased as it is because I wasn't in on him in the first place. So it's like,
It's fine, because we'll talk about it when he drops. I dropped Justin Turner this week in a 12. So
who?
Justin Turner in a 12.
So if that's who you're dropping, I'd rather
have Turner. I don't know if they're on the same team. I'd have to go back and look.
No, but that's like, if, like, we're looking at one or the other, I'd rather have Turner. So if that's if that's the line that you're giving me, like, Turner's a name I'd rather have. And
it's totally team dependent in the end, and people hate that cop out, but that's, can you afford to stash them? Do you need to fill the spot? Like, if you need to fill the spot, yes, you're dropping them. Like, it's just
in 12s, I've realized I'm a lot more liberal. Like, I'm going to be dropping a couple guys this week that I wouldn't drop in 15s. But I'm also realizing week one was a reminder, like, oh, you really didn't need to go after these guys in this league, because you had.
That's how I felt with Justin Turner. Turner is a bench bat for me. And I'm like, I got these other needs to, like, I want to stream this or stream that. Like, Turner's not helping me right now. Given long term, Turner's probably a better player, but maybe more in a 15 than a 12 type thing. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be fun to say. But let's stop with Rengifo. People are probably like, God, Bubby, just get over the mascot.
Just break up already.
Yeah, just break it off. Jesus. Dodgers, you've mentioned, like, they're consistently with their platoon, kind of as expected. Do you see Outman ever running away from this platoon, or is it pretty much locked in, it looks like?
Well, if Hayward misses time.
Hayward stays hurt, yes.
That opens up, I think, Outman with it. And I never really looked at it like Outman was in a strict platoon. I was surprised to see that, because I really thought it was going to be Muncy some days, Outman some days, with Hayward, obviously, strict platoon, and Gavin Lux, strict platoon. Those were the two I thought, like, all right, for sure, these guys are platooning. But no, apparently it's only been Muncy who's safe, which Muncy's been hitting. He hasn't been fielding. I've seen him make a lot of errors, so I'm kind of surprised, but it is what it is, right? Like,
it's just weird because Muncy's had that such a horrific season versus left-handed pitching. So it felt like, okay, if they're ever going to do it, the time is now. Rip the Band-Aid off. see what happens. But
and he decided he wanted to show, well, you have to remember this is probably when's like he's always like the Dodgers have always had a really good lineup, but they've never been this good. This lineup is stupid.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, let's talk Milwaukee, because this one I know has been tilting some people we talk to regularly. So
just say his name, George.
George. Well, but and you were an Ortiz guy.
Yeah, too. But not as bad. Like George is like invested. I want it to happen. George really wants it to happen.
So like Garrett Mitchell goes down. Sal Frelick seems like the guy that's gonna go from third base to the outfield. Joey Ortiz should go to third base. Seemed like a kind of relatively simple decision. But no, Oliver Dunn's in there. There's other moving parts. Like every day a lineup comes out from Milwaukee, and just like if there was ever like a team that you could see the upside, but at the same time look at it and go, what is this? Like they did in Major League when the groundskeepers were talking. This team reminds me of it, especially with their pitching staff. But what are we doing with this situation for fantasy? Because it seems rough.
So I dropped Ortiz in a 15 this Sunday. Just
a lot.
And that's and I'm a guy who likes Ortiz, and last year I was in on him, decided to get back in on him because that's another it goes back to young players. That's again, why would you trade for him in a Corbin Burns package just to play him part time?
Yeah.
That part, and it's elite. He has elite defense. I know he's not the best against righties, but he's not bad. And he hits lefties well. So the elite, but like look, Terang has elite defense. And I mean he's a lefty, so it keeps him in against he has good defense at second base. So I don't know. I was kind of surprised that they just didn't let the guy run with it because, again, they went out of their way to make sure they got him. But, yeah, it's a mess. Oliver, like you mentioned, Oliver Dunn, he's been playing every day against righties, but I think he sat against one of them. And then, like, Bowers played two out of three righties. So it's like there's – and then Ortiz plays part-time against righties. So there's no real, like, set platoon right now. It's more so five out of six types of things, which goes back to that's more annoying. I'd rather be strict platoon than – okay, Ortiz is gonna play four out of six games to overall. Oliver Dunn's gonna play five out of six righties, and Bauer's gonna play five out of six righties. But then you have guys like Gary Sanchez, who I always kind of saw him more as a lefty, like he's gonna catch against lefties to give Contreras a day off and maybe the occasional righty. But he's still another bat that doesn't get in against righties now because they have they're platooning so heavily. So Craig Counsell might have left, but he didn't really leave, is what it feels like right now, you know.
Yeah, this is an interesting. I'm looking up Dunn because I'm pretty sure he was in the fall league this last year and played.
He also had a good spring at one point. I know spring was really strong at one point. I don't know if I'm looking that way.
Because he got dealt from he was at the Yankees Phillies, last year's at the Phillies, a double A at the Phillies last year, 21 homers, 16 steals at 271. That'll play. Uh-huh. And then at spring training with Milwaukee this year, 282, one homer and five steals. So there's some upside there, but yeah, you mentioned two games so far, hitting 286 with an RBI, nothing crazy to write home about. So I guess it's more of a weekly streamer if a lot of situations line up, let's put it that way. Minnesota, Royce is down. I'm not going to talk about that. That's in the past. Willie Castro is honestly always the guy. Kyle Farmer gets a bump. In reality, we've talked about those situations, but I want to hear your thoughts. Edward Julian didn't start on opening day. Like he's going to be in a platoon. We already knew Walner would be in a platoon. We do see, I believe I saw Scott Chu of Pitcherless tweeted out that the Twins play like their next couple weeks all versus right-handed pitchers unless something changes, which is pretty nice for the platoon situation. But how are you attacking the Twins?
So I want to see how – it's this thing. So as long as they're playing righties, you're good, right? But I am curious how lefties are going to work out because I know Austin Martin isn't anything special, but I always thought about – like at one point before they signed Santana, I had Austin Martin projected to make the team as a weak side platoon bat. Because as you saw day one against a lefty, he didn't care that it was opening day. Julian was sitting right against a lefty. Mm-hmm. So I think that's telling of his expectations of Julian's role against lefties. Now, will Julian now go instead of being a strict platoon, plays one out of every three, see if he can handle it, moves up. Like, and that's the thing about Rocco Baldelli is he does that with lefties. Kepler will start off playing against every lefty, turn around and sit against every lefty because Wallner's running hot and Wallner's going to start playing against lefties. And I think Wallner finished the year playing almost regularly in general. Yep. So it goes to show you that I think Baldelli's more like the we're going to play platoons, but I'm also going to let the hot hands stay in the lineup. And we saw Julian in and out, like platoon, not platoon. I think we saw that last year. A long-winded way of saying that Baldelli just does Baldelli things and he platoons. We think the Rays are bad or have been bad in the past, but Baldelli
is a former Ray.
And yeah, and he brings it with him because this team will like we've seen it. Wasn't there one game last year we all were like the first inning they had a relief pitcher just a guy starting, and then by the second inning it was they had the opener, and then the second inning was like a lefty, so they He shifted all
the starters out.
He had guys batting fourth, sixth, and like eighth that were lefty bats, and because a lefty follower came in after the opener, he ended up platooning them second inning, and now he had nobody for the rest of the game, and we were all like in shock and awe. But that goes to show you the type. I mean, obviously he's never done it since, but that's the type of manager Baldelli is. He likes his matchups, he likes his analytics, and he likes his platoon. So I don't think you can ever feel safe with a lefty bat or a righty bat. Like Willie Castro might be one of the few regular players, which is sad because Willie Castro is one of the last names you think of on this team. But Castro, because he's playing third base right now against righties, hits lefties better, I believe, is in this split. Not by much. It's very they were both bad for his career. But anyway, I think Castro might be one of the more regular players in this line, which is hilarious to me because you have guys that are way better, but don't get the same treatment. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm curious to see how this setup goes. If they get all these righties in a row, do we get to see a Julian Kirilloff Wallner like every single day, or does he try to sneak in some different goofiness, which Baldelli will do, as you mentioned? So that'll be fun to monitor for the next week or so. New York Mets, when Vientos went down, it was Brett Beatty's world, but apparently it's not Brett Beatty's world completely with Zach Short playing third base. DJ Stewart's been getting a lot of love, but you're saying probably put a halt on that as well.
Yeah, so I just look at it like this. Zach Short, short side platoon. It's really funny to me. Zach Short side platoon. That's it just works because that's that. But that has been a platoon. We've seen Beatty pinch hit for him. I think I'm not sure if Short pinch hit for Beatty, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did. But I did see Beatty pinch hit for Short against a righty. So it's like a strict platoon there at third base. DJ Stewart's most likely on his way out. JD Martinez obviously rehabbing, could be back by the weekend, but I was reading like he wanted 10 days or so, so he's still reworking his swing. I don't know, it could be next week. It's gonna suck to not get Martinez against the Reds this weekend, but
yeah, that's rough.
But it is what it is. Like if he's not ready, he's not ready. I don't know how much work does a DH need when you've had nothing to do but prep for
hitting. That's what I was wondering. Like he had all offseason looking for a job. Like you're not taking batting practice or like hanging out with, like, even go to the high school, let the kids practice, like throw you BP, like who cares.
But no, nothing. Yeah. I don't know. So that's weird.
It's called old man, rich guy problems.
It must be nice. I don't have those problems. I would like to have those problems.
Yes. Someday, MLBplayingtime.com.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna sell it off for $1 million and call it a day.
I'm skipping the A's. I know they got platoon, but it's the A's. Unless you really think Lawrence Butler or JJ Bleday is worth rostering.
Hey, how dare you besmirch the good name of JJ Bleday? How dare you?
Outside of 15s, are they worth rostering? Yeah,
no, you're just it's just 15s. I can't help myself. This is where I have a hard time transitioning as a player. I went out and got JJ Bleday in 12s, even realizing I'm probably dropping him this week and probably spent too much on Fab in the first place on him. But not like crazy. I didn't go nuts on him, but it was just one of those things where it was like uncontested across the board. I'm like, oh yeah, forget. He's not good enough for 12.
It's a little different. But
it's also just one of those things where you see a guy, Bleday was a platoon last year. This year, he's every day. He's batting top four against righties and sixth against lefties last I saw. So, like, it's interesting, especially you as a former Bleday guy with me.
Yep. No, I'm sure you're still in. I got him on DCs and stuff. I can't do 12s. Yeah.
No, and you're right. So that's where my brain has to flip the switch. Like, hey, there's no value in him there or not as much. Like, he's $2 at most. Don't be spending $12 on this guy, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, I like Bleday, but that's about it. Yeah, he's like, I just think it's worth it. It's interesting because Butler and Bleday have some flashy tools, skill sets potentially. So 15s, there's a lot more intrigue and they should be rostered there. But yeah, nothing beyond that.
Pittsburgh Pirates, they've faced a lot of lefties. I expected at least Tellez to platoon. That's no shock to me. Do we expect Jack Sawinski to be in this much of a hardcore platoon in Pittsburgh?
Initially, no, I didn't until they signed Michael A. Taylor. That's when it was like,
Good point.
Yeah. That's where it was like, oh, and there goes the everyday playing time. So I think he still got two starts. So it shows that he's not in a full on platoon, but at the same time, when you face five straight lefties, you can't just not play these other guys. Right. Yeah. So, Tellez, Sawinski, they're not going to play. I'd say 40% is a good, like upside estimate against lefties type of thing. If you were trying to calculate a play appearance, which sucks because I was a huge Sawinski guy, but that was also before I got him a bunch of DCs, but that was also before the signing. So he was a guy that you can't start up until this week. Now they get five righties in a row after yesterday. So I think Connor Joe goes back to being that part-timer. Now I am curious to see Connor Joe's usage against righties now that he's, you know, because he was leading off, did well, started off pretty hot. But again, seeing all those lefties, that'll do it for him. But I don't remember Joe getting pinch hit for at any point in the game either. And I know they didn't just face lefties for five straight days, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting. I know the Marlins, but even the Marlins have lefties like crazy in the bullpen too. So it's one of those things where like they didn't really have to pull their guys like Joe, because like, oh well, Nardi's probably coming in, or Scott, or like that's just what the Marlins have. So it's one of those things where I don't know, I'm curious to see Connor Joe's usage moving forward, because you know Connor Joe could be a 15 team relevant for sure, but like he runs hot enough to where he could be a 12 team guy. That's why it's like a streamer type. But yeah, just know your platoons here, because Michael A. Taylor's playing every day again this year, so he manages to find a way to be relevant every year.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Gigantes, yeah, Yastrzemski was out on the maternity list, came back on Monday. You mentioned here Wilmer Flores has started regularly. We need to check his PT. Lineup on Tuesday against a bullpen game, primarily with Yarbrough, another lefty. Flores is in, Yaz is in, Wade is on the bench. I've always kind of been a guy that Flores is way better at a hitter than Wade is. I know platoons are a thing, but I just feel I might be overselling this, but I feel like Flores gets more love than Wade, but we'll see. We'll definitely see. So yeah. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that's just me as a Giants fan.
No, and I think you hit the reason why I was so non-committal, because they haven't been very committal to, like, they have, I guess they have mentioned, like, hey, we're going to, like, you've seen the quotes that they were going to platoon Flores, but then Flores found regular playing time. Yaz did come back in and he started tonight. So that's good. I think Yaz is safe. So I am curious, because Flores did sit, I think, the first game of the season when there was a righty up and everybody was healthy and in the lineup. So I think the thing about Flores is we all know he's a good enough hitter to not be in an everyday playing, everyday platoon. But still, without an injury, which I'm sure this team will come up with one or two.
I was about to say, there's going to be plenty of injuries. Like, Conforto's crushing it. Conforto's due for an IL stint. Yaz will have a hamstring at some time. It's like, it just sucks, because when this team is healthy, it's like formidable now with the few acquisitions they made. Mm-hmm. And it just takes like two injuries to turn it all upside down yet again.
But it's nice to have a guy like Flores from a real life standpoint, because yes, you can plug him in as at least offensively. I'm not sure about how the glove works. I don't think the glove is very good.
He can play first just fine now. So like,
yeah, he can stay out of the way at first base. I'll take it, right?
Hey, I'll take it, man. I'll take it.
But yeah, so that's the only thing that's about him is you're not really. It's hard to figure out exactly his role. That's why I'm like, you gotta watch and wait and see with him. But he's a guy that if you have the room, feel free to stash him. Like, he's not like a guy, like, he's going to be useful for weeks here, weeks there, and it's in 15s. But even then, like, I'm having a hard time. I couldn't stash him as much as I want to, because I know when he's starting, he's Wilmer Flores is so good and useful in 15s. But when they are what they're doing now, with just not having enough room for everybody, basically, it's a lot harder to justify stashing him, because I don't think he's good enough to stash as a part-time player, but he's good enough to have on your team when he's starting. It's really weird. He's like one of those weird players that. Not good enough otherwise, but then again, he's worth putting in a decent fab bid to get when he actually has a role. So it's like, it's really annoying to deal with that, you know?
It's why I preach, like, for DCs, draft him, because he'll be so valuable in and out of your season. Like, he's tremendous in that aspect, but you're right. If he's platooning, it's difficult, but the second injury takes place, you want him on your roster because he crushes lefties. He still hits right. Like, you just look at his overall stat line in the last few years, he's proven he can hit. It doesn't matter righty or lefty. So it's just a matter of the playing time. Hopefully, I personally prefer to see him over Wade at first base every day, but that's the Giants fan in me.
Yeah.
Seattle. This is one I didn't even know what to do with coming out of the season, so I just kind of avoided it. But what, like, Dominic Canzone, you got Josh Rojas, you got other moving pieces. How do you see this playing out early on here?
Messy. It's been really messy. It's just aggravating because Canzone plays almost every day against righties, but he's in a strict platoon. I've watched Canzone actually get pinch hit for. And same thing with Josh Rojas. I've seen Josh Rojas get pinch hit for. So it's one of those things where it's like, you got in DCs, these guys still have value because at least they're getting playing time and play appearances. But Canzone's a tough stream. Like, I think Canzone is the better stream. Like, Raley's not playing every day against righties or lefties, obviously. So Raley's kind of the odd man out there. Raley's barely worth rostering in 15. I probably would have cut him, honestly, because I'm just watching the playing time. I know he's playing, like, he's the guy. He's the 5 out of 6 righties guy, but then also 5 out of 6 righties while not. And what's his face? How's what's his face doing? Doesn't help the catch. Yeah, Garver. What's his face? Yeah. Garver. Is Garver back in?
He was in lineup yesterday.
He was back. Yeah. Yep. See, I don't follow Garver that much, and that's why it's like trying to keep up with everything. But yeah, Garver was a big, like, Garver being out would have been his way in, but Garver being back, now the DH is clogged again. So yeah, rarely he's kind of the odd man out. The Canzone's bat plays up, but his defense can be a little questionable. So it's just a mess. I don't really see a good way to roster any of them, unfortunately, as much as I like Canzone too. I would stream Canzone for sure, but just understand that Canzone will not only be limited in games where he starts, because he'll get pulled for against lefty, but he also might not play. Like, if there's six righties out of seven, he might only play five. So that's kind of where he's at right now. And Rojas is playing even less. Like, they want Urias in there a little more, it looks like. So it's like Rojas, although he's getting more playing time against the righties, he might be playing four out of six instead of five out of six. So it's right now it's just kind of a mess there. And stream, I would try to look elsewhere to stream, like I said, with Calzone being the one guy I have no problem streaming as needed if I'm like chasing power or something on a week.
Yeah, I remember when you were touting Canzone last year, and then the D-backs traded him like the next day, so that was fun stuff.
Yeah, he still played after that. I think I dropped him though because I didn't think he would.
Let's go to the Cardinals. Now this one's fun because Lars Nootbaar, you stashed smartly because he should be back maybe next week.
Hey, he could be back by the weekend. You'd be optimistic.
You're doing good. And Victor Scott, I was always pessimistic on the idea that he might not stick because you got Alec Burleson, Brandon Donovan. You mentioned he's let off. He's been playing great. I've been using him in DFS. Like, he's, well, I don't know if great's the right word, but he's been playing well. He's earned the chance to lead off by Nootbaar's out. How would you, like, do you think Scott's the odd man out? Do you think it's Burleson? How do you think this plays?
So I'm pulling it up right now.
Pure speculation, of course, but Nootbaar should be back very soon.
So, and apparently, I saw someone on Twitter mentioned this, which is actually good. I think it matters. They have Nootbaar playing center in his rehab. I think that's a big deal. And Nootbaar has played center. Now, is Nootbaar as good of a center fielder as Scott? No. But I think Scott needs to start hitting the ball really quickly in order to justify them holding up. Because he's also been striking out. Like, now, it's not fair. Victor Scott's also been facing the Dodgers. And
who's he facing? The Dodgers now.
Padres, and the Padres pitching isn't bad. It's not the Dodgers, but it's not bad, right? So it's not the easiest taste of the majors. But with that being said, this is probably why they sent him down, because he crushed spring training, but they wanted him to get more run in AAA in the first place anyway. This isn't a that's why I'm like, if I had to guess, I do, unless they really value his defense, because his defense can be really good in the outfield there with Burleson in the corner or Walker in the corner and Lars in the other corner. But there's a reason why they started him in the minors in the first place. I think he gets the boot because if he was hitting well, like if he was blazing, like just on fire right now. But I would not say that. But the fact that he just hasn't, and again, it's not fair to him because I know Scott's a better player than this, but he only had such a limited window to perform, and he hasn't done anything. So that doesn't help his case. I know that. It's not fair because I know Scott's gonna be better than this, but the problem is I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't know. I guess the answer is I think he gets sent down. As much as I don't want to, I feel like that's. I don't know. I'm going with that. That's my feeling on the matter.
All right, let's go to Tampa Bay, where we're always used to massive.
So certain, right? Just so certain in my answers. Yes,
you're really helping the cause here. Tampa Bay, always a platoon situation. Like, yeah, Brandon Lau, it's one of the many reasons besides his back and other things I wanted nothing to do with him. But Richie Palacios is one that I liked when he was playing with St. Louis. I liked the optimism of maybe taking the Luke Raley role in Tampa Bay. Should I continue to be optimistic, or is this kind of an early season? Well, it probably going to change things.
So Richie Palacios, I'd have to see the lineup tonight, but entering tonight, he started 3 of 5 games. One was a lefty, so he sat against the lefty, started 3 of 4. So it is like the Luke Raley role, where Luke Raley would start 5 out of 6. And that's why I hate that role, because it's really aggravating, because there's like he was like the other day, what Richie Palacios yesterday had a combo meal, right? So a home run and a stolen base. And it's aggravating because now he might sit tonight, or he might sit tomorrow, and he might only play 5 out of 6 against righties. And sure, you'll take the production in spurts while he's giving it to you, but
Palacios it's just aggravating. Sat tonight, by the way, yes.
Against righty or lefty, though?
The Rays, I'll check that out for you.
I saw Meade in the lineup, I think, so I'm wondering if
that's... Meade's in the lineup. Mariano's in the lineup, guessing a lefty based on the lineup I'm looking at there. Heavy righty lineup.
Well, how about we look it up? 2 seconds. It's a lefty. It's Heaney. So, yeah. So, yeah, because Rosario's right in the middle. Yeah, it makes sense. It tracks. But, yeah, so... But right there, he sat, but he already gave you that home run and stolen base for the week. You bank that, you move on. And that's the type of guy he can give you one and one almost a week, right? Like, you know, maybe the home run every week isn't likely, but a couple stolen bases type of guy. And but it's just aggravating because he is that Luke Raley guy, but Luke Raley would get run, but it was always part. It goes back to that. I hate this, like Canzone and all these other guys that when they're in a strict platoon, but then they still take days off against righties. Now you're hamstringing the potential to chase those play appearances and that production on top of it already being hamstrung. And it's just so hard to bank on the production there. So it's like, I try not to hitch my wagon to them too much. But at the same time, in 15s, sometimes you just got to ride the hot hand and understand that, hey, I'm going to get one less game, because that's what happened to me. Now, it was like an OC, and I had a really good replacement, but Taylor Ward, two games versus another guy who had three with decent matchups, too. I sat Ward for him because I was chasing the play appearances, and Ward hit two home runs on my bench, and that, I think it was OC. So that's, again, it's a little more forgivable because you're chasing, you have a solid option with that extra game. You want that extra game.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll, so it's just one of those things where it gets tough. Like, you have to balance chasing that per play appearance production versus chasing the volume. And 9 times out of 10, chasing the volume is the right answer, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. A couple more here. Josh Young, obviously out for a bit with the wrist thing. I expected Ezekiel Duran to get it. Josh Smith started on Tuesday. That was a kind of surprise to me. They did call up Justin Foskey, and that's why I wanted to ask you, because you were very high on him this preseason. So I still think it's Duran's job, but what are you thinking with this Texas deal?
So they had the opportunity to start Duran tonight. It's not like he was tired. It wasn't like he wasn't rested well. And they still went with Smith. I think I'm wondering if Smith and him are going to platoon third base and Foskey platoons first base with Walsh now. I know Nate Lowe is returning sooner than later, so Walsh will just be sent down or DFA'd or whatever it is. But yeah, I thought, see, I'm also wondering if Foskey, because he's a top prospect, and I understand he didn't have the best spring. I know he started coming around at the end a little bit, if I remember correctly, but he was one of their top prospects. I know he's no Langford, but why not let him get some run and see what he offers you? I have a hard time believing that Smith is better. I know Duran is not bad, but we've also seen Duran. He runs hot and then kind of like goes back into his little platoon shell. That's what they did last year. Ran hot. He got like a 6-week run of being like a top 50 player overall in fantasy, and then ended up being obscure the rest of the year. People still chase the upside, which was fun. But yeah, I think people are still holding on to that 6-week window last year where he was absolutely ridiculous and was like setting the world ablaze. And I'm not surprised. I did think he would get the shot first, because all spring and everything else kind of showed like, hey, they like Duran more. But yeah, it doesn't really surprise me. Because today was the travel day for Foskey, so him not starting today, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see Foskey factor in against righties and gets more run. Just to, maybe they want to see what they got in the kid, or maybe it's more likely, because I know I projected with Foskey being the short side platoon with Walsh, and I thought Zeke was going to get more run, then maybe he will. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's one of those things where maybe we don't. The good thing is by the time Fab runs, you'll have an answer. But like, I've had people ask about daily leagues. I'm like, you can't really pick up. I know Foskey's exciting because he's a top prospect or whatever for the organization, but they haven't shown any inclination that they want to start him going back to spring regularly, let alone obviously, again, day one's not fair, but he's kind of a wait and see guy. So by Sunday, we should definitely have answers, which is nice. But the other leagues, you might want to just hold off, or if you want to take a shot, just don't drop anything worth of like a really solid player. Don't drop a solid player or a solid spec for him, because I don't think it's worth that type of gamble.
Last thing I have to ask you here, the Blue Jays, you have IKF is actually an everyday player. This is actually happening in Toronto right now.
He's starting today again. I think he started all 6 games of the season. I'll double check. But yes, he has started against every single righty, which if he was going to sit, it was going to be against righties because he's a righty bat. But he has started. We're going to Toronto. I have to scroll down. Great podcasting. So he started all 5 games. No, he started 4 or 5. I don't know when he sat, but it was against a righty. But he still started 4 or 5, and he started today. And he's batting 8th or 9th every day. I don't know what he's batting today against a lefty. But he sat one game, and so he's been an everyday player. He's playing more times than not, and the one time he sat, I couldn't tell you who it's for, but Ernie Clement has played 4 out of 6 now, and he's playing over tonight. He's playing with Biggio's an everyday player against righties. Biggio sat his first game tonight after playing against 5 straight righties. But Schneider has started 2 games this year, and only one was against a righty. He started 20% of the first 5 games, basically, which is it's just fun to throw a percentage out there because it makes it sound way worse. I mean, it's still really bad, 1 out of 5. But yeah, Schneider's buried. Ernie Clement's game playing time over Schneider, I guess, was like the main takeaway here, and it's really just frustrating because I had no Schneider. I wasn't a Schneider guy, but I didn't think Ernie Clement was going to take playing time away from him.
Exactly. I understood the Schneider discourse and everything, but the Clement part was not even a part of the discussion
and
in my brain.
IKF being a regular is stupid, but he's played 5 out of 6, man. And 4 of those have come against 5 righties.
So I just bring that up because when he played regularly last year, like
Does he light the world on fire? No, but as like a 15-team league, if he's going to get every day at bats, last year he had 242, 6-14. He's had 20 stolen bases in the previous 2 years. Like, there's an avenue to where he's quasi-viable like in a 15-team league, which is pretty crazy to think about. All right, let's talk about some ads of the week on OCs, the top added players. We'll just have some fun discussion here. Mr. Kerlin, the top added player in 12-team OCs for week two, Jason Foley, added in 226 leagues, as high as 424, as low as $28. So we actually had a nice low. Everyone went in on Jason Foley this year, this week. You know, he's pumping over 100, which is great. Got the win again on Monday. How excited should we be about Jason Foley being the Tigers and all?
I mean, bad teams need saves too, and they already have two, and three, and he's gotten two of them. So I understand being in on them. He wasn't available in my mains. He was available in OCs, and I'm checking right now. He actually went 157, one of mine. I got Kevin Ginkle in a league. I didn't need Kevin Ginkle. That's where I messed up with OCs, because I went after him and was like, oh, wait, I already have. It doesn't matter. And no, and he went 174 in my other one. So he was actually a lot more affordable in my OCs. But like you mentioned, he's gone crazy amounts in these other leagues. And I get it. He was actually rostered in both my mains already, which is good for those guys. They save a lot of money. But saves are – this is the year where we entered the year with question marks at saves, right? People took specs at the end of their – drafts, yeah. And they didn't work out. I'm still holding on to Kopech because I'm still holding on to hope in a sense.
We'll see tonight. The White Sox have a 2-1 league right now, so we'll see how that plays out. Maybe.
Has he pitched yet, though? Or has
I don't know. I have not looked. But I do want to ask you, we're going to skip over Travis Day. I know that's pretty self-explanatory with Sean Murphy out. But the third most added player was Kevin Ginkle in 171 leagues, high as 341, as low as 31. You mentioned you accidentally added him. We'll talk about all of our ads and drops later. But Ginkle should fall into the Seawald role, which we talked about. Seawald should miss a month, maybe. We'll see. But would you rather have had Foley or Ginkle if pricing wasn't an issue?
Foley. I just think Foley has more runway to the job. And Ginkle, my thing about Ginkle is, I mean, as much as I like him, I do think Seawald's the guy when he gets back. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily agree with that or think
I think it's Seawald's role. They paid him.
Rebia is pitching the eighth right now.
There we go. There's a sign.
Hopefully. Please. Now Kopech comes in and gets burned because it's the Braves. That's going to suck. But anyway. So it's one of those things where what were we talking about again? Sorry. I was like,
Foley versus Ginkle and Seawald coming back.
And that's all that is. I think Seawald's the guy who comes back. Now, I actually went after Ginkle really hard. And I have one main event where my only share of Seawald is in one of my mains. Go figure. And it was the Friday before the injury. So it was like the injury happened on Monday after Fab ran. So So I went after Ginkle. I put 189 on him. I was a runner up. And that hurt because I really need saves in that league. But it is what it is. Like, I do think I'll have an opportunity to get a similar type of closing situation for a similar type of run at some point in the season. It's not going to be the last closer injury or the last guy who loses a job. So it sucks because I can use it now, but I get it. But yeah. So, but at the same time, Ginkle does have that outside chance of running with the job. This team's been very, very loyal to Seawald. And I don't think that I think they're going to give Seawald a shot to get his job back versus just giving it away. That's just my two cents on the situation, but yeah.
All right, the next most added player after the obvious ones there in the closers, Michael Conforto, added in 144 leagues, as high as 191, as low as a dollar. Conforto started out the year great. He's already got three homers in five games, hitting 368. Obviously, not all of this is going to be sustainable, but I've written about it in a couple articles already this week that a healthy Conforto is a productive 25 to 30 home run bat that hits probably 260 or something, and he'll play for fantasy. He'll play. The point is healthy, but right now he's healthy, Mike. So I think this is a fun pickup. What were your thoughts on this one here with Conforto?
Like you mentioned, Conforto healthy is a solid. He was a top like 150, 200-ish outfielder, like outfielder three or four, you know, like a three. Back when he would get drafted for that purpose, right? Like a mid-20s, maybe. We always dreamt on that 30 home run season for Conforto because we knew the power was there, but he just didn't swing enough, you know? That was always his thing. Like he wasn't aggressive enough. But then it was always like, if you look at his first half or second half splits, slow starter, crushed in the second half like 2 years or 3 years straight. It was really funny. I know this because I was a huge Conforto guy. I couldn't get enough of it. I always wanted him. But so I have him in DCs, which has been fun. It's been nice to have him there. But yeah, I like him. I just think I also kind of look at him like he's a streamer in 12s and he has more staying power in 15s because 15s are deeper. But Conforto, I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen enough of him yet. It's way too small of a sample, but it's definitely encouraging because our big thing for Tatis this year, I know you and I were both on him, is a lot of it was, hey, he's healthy. He played, he came back, got through stuff, and he should be like, now the hangover is over. He should be back to, like, and he's showing glimpses of being himself, right? Well, Conforto could have easily, now on a smaller scale, because Conforto isn't the talent Tatis is, but Conforto's entering his first full offseason healthy again, and kind of like, or not first full, but like the first, like kind of like got past that first year, getting working back, missed a ton of time with the shoulders and stuff like that. Maybe he's just finally getting back into his own, and it's just good to see. I mean, that's all. It could be simple as that. It's just one of those things where he's maybe just finally fully healthy, or it's a hot streak. Last year, Brian Anderson did this, and look what happened. Yes,
true.
Brian Anderson, baby. What a name drop.
I'm going to go with the other side of that spectrum, but you're not wrong. We've seen a lot of weird things happen. So I like the pickup this week. I wouldn't have broke the bank for him because I guess I'm pessimistic in this. I'm expecting an IL stint, unfortunately. That's just the reality. I got a Giants fan. Give me 140 games of Conforto and I'm pumped, but
little. He gave you 125 on last year, man.
Yep. Oswaldo Cabrera, next added guy, 124 leagues, 217 as the high, which is bonkers to me. One men. Cabrera's filling in for DJ LeMahieu even after John Birdie was traded for. Cabrera's played in 5 games, 2 homers, hitting 400 so far to start the season. Obviously, or we should think, obviously, some of this is going to fall back. But early on here, he's produced. Were you interested in Oswaldo Cabrera, especially losing Royce Lewis?
Well, I didn't lose.
And Josh Young.
Hey, I lost Josh Young, not Royce Lewis. And that's not fair. I lost Josh Young on a Monday. That's not fair. No, but I'm lucky. I double tap third base in my leagues where I had Josh Young. So although it still hurts, at least I have a third base is pretty barren right now on the waiver wire. At least there's plenty of first base streamers, but third base, there's like nothing to stream. It's pretty gross. I digress, though. Back to our guy here in Oswaldo Cabrera. I don't know if you remember this, but I was a big Oswaldo Cabrera guy last year. I was really in on him at the draft costs. He was starting on my teams to start the year, like in the 15s. And I gave him like a month of run before I was like, yeah, no, I think I cut bait week 3, which was like, or maybe it was week 4, which was like when I cut him, he was still like 97%. Like I was one of those like proud moments of like when I cut someone properly because he just wasn't doing anything for like the first month of the season and he never really came around. Apparently something about working with Soto on something. He did. I've read something about that and heard stuff about that. So, okay, maybe there's something there, but also this is a guy that was just when you're removed from being a sleeper for us, he's only 25. Yeah. He just turned 25. I don't think he's necessarily going to be like a dude, but I do think there's some useful weeks there. I think he's better served for 15s though. It goes back to, I think he caught some of that 50. Like there's high. I think there should be more hype for him in 15s than 12s. Cause I think there's more utilization there, but I'm not against it. I wouldn't have spent the 200 wherever he said the max was. It was a lot. I wouldn't have spent
17.
I think I put bids in on them in my OCs, but they were like around $30, maybe $20. Again, that's a lot for an OC. And I lied. He was in the high teens for me. I just didn't have a whole lot of interest in OCs. And in my main events for 15s, I didn't get overly aggressive on him. And he went for 35 in one of mine. And where did he go in the other one? And these are 15 teamers for reference, by the way. So people understand like 27 in the other one. Great bids. Wow. 27, 26, and 32 to 29 or something. Great bids. But yeah, so that's where he was going in mains. That's why I'm like, he probably should have been a lot cheaper in OCs. And yet in OCs, I know it varied in 15s as well, but the fact I can't imagine anybody spending even 80 on him in an OC. I don't think he's a special of a talent. That's all.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that much. Like I'm intrigued, but not going too crazy. Let's talk Brady Singer after a phenomenal start, 7 shutout innings with 10 strikeouts against the Minnesota Twins. Brady Singer was added in 114 leagues for as high as 201, for as low as a dollar. Like I love Brady Singer. I've talked about him, but especially in a 12, we're talking OCs here. Was not nearly that as excited to be going after Brady Singer with not even a two-step this week. So what are your thoughts on, I guess, generically, what were your thoughts on what we saw from Brady Singer?
So I thought it was interesting. So, okay, I'm trying to see if they updated it. They did. Okay, so he added – now. Yeah, I would say he added it.
Changed.
There's he added a four seamer. He added a four seamer. Like he had one last year, only and they, so they updated it finally. If you looked at the game log on Savant, it showed the four seamer the morning after. Because if I saw it Sunday night, I'd probably been a little more interested and inclined to bid on, thinking, okay, there's not just a pitch mix change, but he's adding something. He added a third pitch. And not that the four seamer was great, but he threw it primarily to left-handed batters, which gives him, I mean, it got crushed actually. So I don't know if he wants to throw it more, but it's a third pitch. It's a pitch mix change. And he led with the slider instead of the sinker. So there's like, it's like a double whammy. Like he's throwing a four seamer now. He threw a four seamer a total of five times last year for 0.2% on average for the year. He threw it 14.3% of the time yesterday. Again, it got hit pretty hard. Not sure he's going to keep throwing as much, but it's there. It's an offering. But the slider change, I don't know. There's just, it's always intriguing to see a guy add a pitch and maybe have a third pitch, even though he didn't quite do well with it like he should have or like you would hope. But at least it's there. It's an offering. And it was weird because his actual Savant page wasn't showing it and it updated on the actual like player page, you know, the player breakdown part on the Savant under the game log. So I caught that the next day and I thought that was interesting. But yeah, Singer's a guy that you and I think it was it Ryan? I mean, you actually agreed on something and gave Ryan a little bit of a hard time a little bit about that.
Probably. That makes sense.
No, Ryan didn't like Singer. And I was hey, man, Ryan's we're going to text you.
Well, Ryan's big thing and many others' big thing is he needed a third pitch. Like you said, it doesn't have to be a great third pitch, but he has to have a third pitch. And he showed that in the first start. I know Corbin Young put out some cool tweets breaking down some certain things. And it's even so it's worth monitoring. Like you're saying, this is a new thing. This could change the way he throws, basically. But
with that said, if we have any chance to tell Ryan to suck it, we should take it. So Ryan, suck it. Now, if Singer gets blown up, this never happened. We never had this discussion.
Exactly.
This is a victory lap. Here, this is our victory lap. One week victory lap.
We're victory lapping Singer out of all the things we could victory lap. That's a lot about your start to
season. Yeah, victory lapping a guy that was on my bench in every DC I have him. Yeah, and I didn't even start. But this week against the White Sox was a great stream.
All right, next most added player is Victor Scott. We already hit on him pretty much, so we're going to just go past him for some other names here. JD Davis, added in 99 leagues, as high as $101, as low as a buck. Good start to the season for the new third baseman for the A's. 385 average, two home runs over four games. I've always been optimistic with JD Davis, just a matter of consistent playing time. I laughed when he went to the A's. I'm like, it's perfect. They have no reason not to play him. Like, we're really going to see who JD Davis is. Now, similar to people tell me with Geloff all the time, yes, run production is going to struggle. Like, he had the two home runs, hit 385, but I believe it was like three runs scored and two RBIs are flip-flopped. Nothing crazy there. What's your thoughts on JD Davis, though? Like, he got added. He feels still more like a 15-teamer, but I guess if he lost a Young or a Lewis or something, JD could fit into that mold.
And that's exactly what it is. I think you chase the power upside there a little bit. You chase some production and hope for the best. We all know JD Davis in spurts can run. We've seen him run as hot as anybody. I think he's doing it right now. You know, JD Davis can just catch fire, but his lows can be kind of low too. But there's everyday playing time. He's batting in the middle of the order in Oakland. JD Davis is a guy that you ride till the wheels fall off. Don't be afraid to cut him because he's gonna get cuttable again in 12s and 15s. You're holding. Most likely the rest of the year probably, because you just want playing time and you want middle of the order production, and JD Davis is going to offer both. And the A's aren't great, but they're not terrible enough to where they won't produce even in the top of that lineup. So maybe they are terrible enough, but I have some optimism because I just blindly like them because I can't help myself.
That happens. Garrett Crochet picked up in 74 leagues, as high as $300, as low as $2. Crochet, 7 innings, 1 run, 8 Ks against the Braves on Tuesday night. Gives him 2 starts on the year now, 13 innings, 2 runs, 16 strikeouts. Pretty dominating stuff from Garrett Crochet. Obviously, there'll be innings concerns at some point in time, but would you have been aggressive on grabbing him for the time being?
After seeing tonight, I would have said no because he faced the Braves and then he dominated the Braves, which I have to actually look more into that start, but obviously just looking at
the stat line. I benched him where I had him because he was facing the Braves, and I'm not ashamed to say it.
How do you – I mean, Aaron Nola, I think that we all agree that Aaron Nola is better than Crochet, even though Nola has his problems.
I think that's safe,
We saw what happened to Nola against the Braves, and I know he's home run prone and stuff like that here and there, but like, my point is far better pitchers will struggle against the Braves and Crochet. And I think Crochet is just one of those things where he's still a new pitcher. Teams are still seeing him for the first time. So he has that going for him. But how are you not excited? And if you were not smart enough, but if you were risky enough, to ballsy enough, if you will, to start Crochet against the Braves. Good kudos to you, because right now, he's at least last we looked, he was lined up for a win.
Yep, he's lined up for the win. It's the bottom of the 8th, 2-1. Keeping an eye on that one to see if we get some Kopech action.
He came in. So Brebbia came in, walked two.
Oh, Kopech finished the inning.
But he did so in 8 pitches. So I think he'll come out for the 9.
Yeah, he walked the first batter and got double play. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. Next up, I'm curious to hear your thoughts here.
I'm excited. Sorry. Mitch got saved so bad.
Mitch Haniger picked up in 67 leagues, as high as $95, as low as $3. Again, similar to Conforto, if Haniger's healthy, we know the production that he could produce, but his health track record is almost probably worse than Conforto. Mm-hmm. But on the opening weekend, he's played 5 games now, .294 average, 1 home run. Are we just thinking ride it out while we can, or do you just not have any interest in a guy like Mitch Haniger?
No, similar to JD Davis. You know the power is going to be there, and you know the playing time is going to be there in the middle of the order bat. And this team is better than the A's. So I think Haniger is the same guy where you're just almost attacking the volume, knowing that when a healthy Haniger can give you home runs in bunches and production in bunches. I think that's all it is with Haniger. I get it. I get it as more of a streamer, short-term play, see where it goes. And if he pops off and he's that top 150, 200 bat, it paid off. But realistically, what is that going to last a couple months before he gets dinged up?
Yeah, it's just like the biggest thing is it's yes, these are good ads, but man, what are we breaking banks for? That's the question. Jose Caballero, we talked about the Rays, you know, annoyance in their platooning, but he seems to be the dude at shortstop, and he's picked up in 62 leagues, as high as 85, as low as a dollar. 4 games so far, .385 average, 2 runs, 3 ribbies, a stolen base for Caballero. Any interest in a guy like this, or is this more of a 15-team play versus a 12?
I look at him as a 15-team play unless you're desperate for speed.
Yeah, that's fair. It's very, very fair. Bryce Turang, we've talked about him quite a bit. We don't need to. He's got 6 steals now in the season. Pretty cool stuff there. Tanner Houck, we know why 2-step. He pitched great on Monday. David Robertson, Justin Lawrence, Chris Martin were some of the more picked up players right after that. Any interest in like a Robertson? Like Lawrence is in Colorado. Robertson's behind Leclerc. Leclerc sucks. I've been saying that. Robertson will end with more saves than him. And they got Chris Martin because Kenley Jansen. So how would you look at those 3 closers, Robertson, Lawrence, and Chris Martin?
I think Lawrence is the only one that's confirmed, but the Rockies are awful, and I don't want the Coors closer. He's chasing saves. I don't want to go after Lawrence. Martin is more intriguing just because we keep seeing Jansen. He'll be healthy for a day, then he's banged up, and then he pitched, and now he's like, apparently he's okay today. We'll see how he is next time he pitches, right? Because apparently like that was the issue. He pitched one game and was banged up. So Martin's far more interesting to me. And then the Robertson, I agree that Leclerc's leash is getting really short. I think Leclerc's still the guy because last night Robertson came in like at the 7th and pitched the 7th and 8th of what was initially a close game. And then obviously we all know that it was a blowout and Young's wrist got blown out. But yeah, yep. I digress. I got digress again because I'm just sad.
I wasn't going to keep bringing it up for you.
I'm sad. Okay. Misery loves company. I'm sad, Bubba.
I get it.
I need a hug.
All right. On that note, let's talk about fab results for the week. So if you want to pull yours up, we can do your – we'll start with your 15s. Start there. I'll discuss my auction 15, and then we'll do some 12 talk also. So if you want to go to your 15 first –
I have 3 of them this year. So Cole Irvin, because I like the schedule. And of course, I took him over Alec Marsh because I'm smart. I liked Irvin's schedule more. Marsh scared me with the starting off with the Orioles. And I'm so smart for that one. It was cheap, 16-13. So it was a good win. Mark Canna and JJ Blade. Look at that. I talked these guys up. I was targeting playing time and at bats. These guys have them. That's all that was. I did overpay for Blade in this league, 41-7, because I think there's more long term stability like potential there. So I wanted to be a little more aggressive there. McKenna was 26-18, so it was, I'm okay with that bid. So I didn't go crazy. Oh, I have Paul Blackburn, $4-0. He gets Detroit this week. So that's what that was.
Yep.
I'm targeting Detroit. Just keep going. My next main, real quick.
Yep. Just go through all yours, and I'll do my 15.
Rowdy Tellez, 9-0. I was surprised to get him uncontested. Not that he's special, but because we know he could be powers in bunches. He's starting off the season decent, even facing some lefties. So I'm just gonna take a shot there. And Darno, 31-26. I thought like that's my Sean Murphy league. So it made a lot of sense to go out, and I bid again, really solid bid. I was happy with that one. My Olak, I did one of those. I love those. again, got aggressive with Bleday, 37-10. Whoops. And that's actually my only ad in this league because I was so aggressive the first week in Fab that I got to be very careful with money for a few weeks.
So is that all your 15s?
Those are my three 15s, yeah.
Okay, so my one 15 that we'll talk about is my OLAC, Online Auction Championship. I added Brandon Marsh, dropped Ramon Laureano 6-3. Marsh already went deep on Tuesday, so that's already paying off. And then my other ad is I added Alec Marsh and dropped Jason Hayward 4-0. So I spent $10, got a big 7 innings and 5Ks with ratios and a home run so far.
Yes, pretty, shove it, shove it.
Pretty
shove
pumped it. On that week of ad drops, if I say so myself. They will shove not it. Always be this fun, but that one was. All right, Mr. Curlin, you entered the 12-team discussion this year. So let's talk. Well, you have two OCs you ended up with?
Three. I did one more because I
went from the one to three. This is fun. Okay, so let's go at it.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not at all. But give me your three, your ad drops for your three OCs, and we'll do my three OCs.
All right. So my first one, I actually did take the plunge on Emerson Hancock, and I'm not mad at the results. I mean, it wasn't great, but he got the win, I believe, yesterday. Bowden Francis was who I dropped, and that worked out because I didn't start Francis. Yeah. Well, I didn't give him a chance to start. I made that swap. And then JD Davis, 16-2. Hancock was 19-11. So not bad. A little more aggressive. Again, JD Davis was I took a shot on some upside offense there. And I didn't go crazy spending, obviously. Anyway, next OC. I have Kevin Ginkle, 89-63. So I didn't go. I refused to spend huge on Ginkle, right? So I 89, I was fine with. Just
you got him for 89. You got him for 89, you said?
Mm-hmm. And I was fine with that price because that's for 6 weeks of a closer. But that's the league I think I don't need a closer in. That's why I was like, oh, I misplayed that. And then Bleday, 24-0, because apparently, again, told you, I went too I just had Bleday on the brain, and I went way too aggressive on him in my OCs. Because, yeah, I don't know why. Didn't need to. Again, I could have done – I have to remember. He's like a $2 or $3 guy. But this is the same league where Conforto went for 49. So I'm like, did I really overpay? Haniger went for 36, and I understand these guys are better, but I was kind of thinking that's where I had to overpay. There's no question. I overpaid for him there.
Yes,
you did. And I did it again. Apparently, Bleday, my third OC, I paid.
Bleday on like every team now. It's
uh-huh. Mark Canna, 16-2 though. So it's like I did stick to my guns with the same streamers. I took that 15-team mindset and applied it. And that's thankfully, the hardest
thing is going back and forth.
And especially for somebody who has limited, I've played two OCs and I think I finished 6th and 8th in them. And this was like 3 years ago. So I haven't touched them since. And I'm adjusting. So I blew some fab unnecessarily. But the good news is I'm realizing that I can go really cheap on guys, honestly.
Carlin.
What?
Kopech starting the 9th.
I can't. If I go watch it, he's going to get
blown up. Yeah, keep talking about your OC pickups.
No, that's it. That's it. That's it. Bleday overdid it again. And I'm Mark Canna. But it was a good way. It was a good learning experience because now it's like, okay, let's tone it down a little bit. Let's get back on track and make those guys your $2 to $5 bids. Only spend on – only go big on splashes. Don't even waste your time with the mid money.
That's kind of how I do things. You're going to see that here. And again, something I've talked about in recent years in 12s is being much more at dropping guys, even if it sounds crazy. So you guys are about to buckle up for some of these drops. You're going to be like, Bubba, what are you talking about? But here we go. And I might try to add him again. It might cost me more, but this is what happens in 12s, and I'm going to be very aggressive this year. So my first 12, I added Kyle Gibson. First two-step, went great on Monday. 8-0, dropped Griffin Canning. Next up, Yoan Moncada dropped Tyler Wells, 3-0. I still like these pitchers, but they're streamers in 12s for me. And then Matt Wallner dropped Aaron Hicks, 1-0. Hicks went off, but I was getting ahead of the Wallner buzz before next week's potential just monster setup against right-handed pitching for him. All right, OC2, I added Kevin Ginkle, dropped Ryan Weather, 77-51. I'll take that. And then I added Brenton Doyle, dropped Joey Meneses, 9-4. Got Rockies at home this weekend and then next week for the start out. And this is the one where I added Kyle Gibson, dropped Justin Turner, 6-0. We'll see how that pans out. And then OC3, Yoan Moncada dropped Joey Meneses, 6-0. Kyle Gibson dropped Tyler Wells, 4-0. So I got Gibson everywhere. And pretty pumped on that first start, and I just don't ruin it versus the Marlins. That would be much appreciated, but fun stuff there. All right, Curlin, we're going to wrap it up there. Any final thoughts as we're heading into the first full week of action? You know, you're sweating Kopech. He's got one out in the 9th, 2-0 to Ozuna.
I'm watching it.
Any final thoughts as we head on out for this week's episode?
I just need
Ozuna just hit his second home run of the game.
Did he really?
Yeah. It's 3-2 now.
Son of a gun. You're ahead of me.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there it is. Oh. He ripped it. It was a 40. It was a 99 fastball in, and he just pulled it. Just absolutely yanked it.
Any final thoughts as we head out of here? My ratio. I
was just about to say I need the fantasy gods to be kind to me after the ratio crushing that they've done to me, and then that happened literally as I was about to say it. So cool. All right.
It's early.
I know, but man, it's so depressing just to see, like, when I there's a guy in my league with a 0.6 ERA and I have a 9, like an 8 ERA. The same guy has like a point something whip. I have a 2. How do you have a 2 whip? I don't think that's possible. I mean, don't get me wrong, I won't finish the year with it, but it's just one of those things, like, holy crap, man. How, like, and then you look at, like, okay, it just made sense because I had Ober and Nola in that league. Yep, so
that'll do it.
And Leclerc had a blow up outing too, I think, or a really bad walk outing, but. Man, I like seeing Kopech pump 97-99 consistently because he can't just let loose.
He'll be fine on the end. Not many guys can turn on a fastball like that on the hand, so it'll be okay.
But still, all right. Anyway, yeah, that's all I got. We'll wrap it up there.
Make sure you check out Mike on Twitter at Mike_Crowley. Go check out MLBPlayingTime.com, whereas where I literally have tabs open everywhere of that because it's my go-to source for things, and it's good stuff. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric. And we'll be back with you guys next time. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 664. Catch y'all later.